Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You're about to listen to an interview which our socios enjoyed in full 12 months ago. If you'd like to listen to these exclusive monthly big interviews on the day that they're released, it's time to join us. That means supporting us. It means the price of a pint per month. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Go now, join and become a socio. That means you'll get that extra big interview every month. And you'll also unlock our entire archive straight away, all for £2.99 a month. It's the best deal in town, baby. And we need you. Pat Nevin was a unique footballer and is now a thoughtful, reflective, fun media commentator. He's also a music obsessive, so you can guess it was only a matter of time until he joined us as a guest on The Big Interview. We spent a brilliant couple of hours in Pat's company covering a great deal. Why John Terry is misunderstood, in certain senses at least. How good Eden Hazard can become, why he hasn't already. Why the Irish sports media is on another level altogether. John Peel gets more than a mention, deservedly, as does Pat's passion for DJing. This interview was recorded in the function room of an outstanding Edinburgh pub. Thanks to Sean and all the staff of the St Andrews Brewing Company at a house in Broughton Street Lane in Edinburgh, which set the perfect indie tone for a memorable big interview. I was startled to hear a perspective that I don't have as much grip on, but you talked about a guy who has obviously got you transfixed and who's now moved into management. You talked about John Terry. Mm-hmm. And in my small number of interactions with him one-on-one, I've seen players around the Chelsea training ground, oh God, it's just John. And they obviously have a mixture of fear and awe and love. Mm-hmm. And in the interviews I've done with him one-on-one, he rips up any stereotypes you bring into the room, mm-hmm. because there are certain people who are just commanding. I don't know if it's what they transmit or how the haircut is, how the eyes are, what the words are, I don't know. But like, in terms of listening to somebody communicate back, he's one of the most riveting people I've ever come around. And you extrapolate from that, don't you? If you've never had the gift to play professional football, like, yeah. you, we all kind of go, well, what if I was playing with that guy? And my judgment is that it would have been one hell of an experience being led by or playing alongside John Terry. And it seems you are quite struck by him as an individual, not just as a footballer.
Yeah, I hate falling for the tropes that I'm fed, be it media, be it anyone.
Yeah.
And you make a decision about somebody before you meet them. because many people have done that about me. And then they meet me and they go, oh, you're not really like that at all. But they've decided you are. I mean, you only need to go on social media and you find that out. But I had made my decision about John Terry before I ever met him, because the things he'd done wrong, which he has done plenty of things wrong, and certain specific things are almost anathema to me as a human being. You know, like, and I met him and I thought, God, he's so disarming. That's extraordinary. And I spoke to him a few times, not a huge amount of times, and just thought, I'm not finding any weakness here. And I immediately started thinking, I see, you're a sociopath, because everybody is utterly, and you used the word at all before I did, everyone is slightly in awe of you. And it's not necessarily actually because of his caps or what he's won. It's actually not that, it's something else, it's the personality. And he's given off. Now, I've met one or two. We mentioned earlier on, we were chatting beforehand about Jock Stein, obviously one of those types of people. And there are very, very few of them around. Well, very few that I'm kind of taken by anyway, to that level. So I started watching him closer. So not spending time speaking, but being in the company where he was in and watching him and thinking, right, is this an act? Is this you manipulating people? And he didn't seem to be doing it for anyone else. He was just being who he was. Mm. And it's an extraordinary reaction. So if you ask someone like Didier Drogba or Lampard or Mourinho, or they'll all say the same.
Impressive, strong, powerful, self-willed men, and yet they're impacted similarly.
Yeah, they're going, wow, he's just an incredible person. And the classic old line, you would almost do anything for them. You know, now, I don't know if I would have been like that playing with him, but I'm quite struck by it. Also struck by the intelligence. It's a different type of intelligence, isn't it? The type of intelligence that you have dealing with people. And he's extraordinary at that. So when I looked at all the people coming through and thought, well, who would be a good manager? You know, and there's loads of them there from Giggsy and Rio and Frank and all the rest of it. I would put him at the top of the ones most likely. Not definite. Absolutely nobody gets a definite to succeed in management, because it's a stupid game. And you need to get the right time, the right club, and the right situation as well. But if I'd put money anyone, it would be him, because I would suspect that he would get, and it's a hate for cliches, but he would get that dressing room and those players doing everything. And there's a big thing about any management, it's not football. I mean, one of the things I studied before I became a footballer is management, is maximising the potential of the people that are working under you. If you can do that, you can do no more. I have a massive suspicion that he can do that. As good as anyone.
Automatically, probably, right? I mean, albeit that he is analytical, I think, particularly, because I think he's very streetwise. And that isn't in any way pejorative, I don't think. I think, you know, London was, its personality was, a very streetwise city, one where you had to be quite sharp and quick, but people around you, not just about yourself, in which to survive. And I think he has that, but also, I think that when you've got, I don't know what presence is, or how you radiate intensity. But he does do both of those things, and I can't explain it, but it is the truth, I think.
We are, you're dancing around being able to say it's impossible to tell. Because if there's a simple way of telling it, people would copy it, or do it, or affect it.
Yeah.
You know, and is it Burns? Was it? Not Rabbit, the other one, George, who said, you know, if you can fake sincerity, you've got it made. To be fair, it's just something special. It's something other. And I'm very hugely impressed with that side. Doesn't mean you're impressed with every single part of a person's personality. In the world that we live in just now, that's usually picked up as a quote and people then dig you back in, but I don't care.
No.
I remember a time John was going through a really bad time with some of the sort of front page stories were, and I went to a company and said, look, I want to make a documentary about him and I want to put a different spin on it. And, what do you mean spin? I said, I just want to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And they absolutely weren't doing it. And I said, well, wouldn't you like to have the truth?
Out of fear that they might be perceived in a certain way.
Exactly.
But what's happened to, like, articulacy and freedom of speech and democracy? That's a tiny little, you know.
Well, that's you're talking that
microcosm.
That may have been 7, 8, 9 years ago, and that's the case 7, 8, 9 years ago. I'm seeing it a lot worse.
The Met Police not investigating election fraud because of politically sensitive times.
Exactly. So I've kind of, when I have any of my falls, that I will have things that I will say.
By being
because
honest.
I will say something honest. I said something honest the other day on radio, which got me tons of abuse in various places.
Go on.
And I feel so comfortable with it. It's a really nice feeling. There was a game, Spurs were playing against Cardiff, and I was at that game. And there was a sending off. I don't know if you saw it, it was last Saturday night. One of the Cardiff players made a tackle from behind but put his leg over the top, and it looked horrible.
Mm.
To which I said, yeah, that's a booking, but you get sent off, and it's a bit harsh, because there was a proprium that was raining down on me. I said, but he wasn't trying to hurt him.
Mm.
He was just basically bringing him down.
Mm-hmm.
It looked ungainly, clumsy, and he abused you. How can you think that? Well, I'll tell you how, without being arrogant. I've probably had as many tackles as anybody around, anyone you get around just now at 800 professional games, and the type of player who would get that tackle. That's not the one I was worried about. That's not the one I was, you know, it was going to injure me badly. That would get me annoyed.
The one where you knew either in advance or once it's impacted that somebody was out to do you.
Yes, you knew, you actually knew it before it came, the one that was trying to do that, and that was more common then than it is now. But that was not a tackle, it was out to hurt. Now, he could have got hurt if he'd have felt. I mean, yep. Salah fell in an odd way in the Champions League final. Kiev. But that wasn't a deliberate attempt to go and dislocate his shoulder, for God's sake.
Yeah.
The madness of people suggesting of that.
Although he's a brutal tough
yes.
cut. He's been portrayed as like
you know, madness.
Hess or Himmler. This evil scheme that he's been planning for weeks, and he's falling just as I wanted him to. There's the pop I was waiting for.
It was laughable. It was actually laughable.
Thank
hearing
you.
People saying that. And I'm going, don't even, there isn't a human being in the world that is capable of doing that and making that happen. Don't be daft. So when you're on and you're doing, if you're doing an analysis or something, I have to be honest. And even when I'm saying it sometimes, I know I'm saying it and I know the reaction it's going to get.
Yeah.
And some people think, well, you're just saying that for reaction. Mm. In that case, no, I will back it up.
Yeah.
So that's where we are now, that I will continue to say whatever I feel I want to say, but I will not say it for pure effect.
No.
And that's the other side of it. In times that I've talked on media, television, radio, whatever, I'll quite often be expected to say, oh, he should be sacked.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say that. I'll say, look, here are the circumstances. There are a lot of circumstances. Again, a lot of chat a while back about Gordon Strachan being, you mentioned this, being the Scotland manager, and he didn't get Scotland to the Euros and World Cups, etc. And I'm looking at it thinking, he's maximising the potential of all those players.
Yeah.
Didn't get done very well in Scotland. Mm-hmm. I said, well, it doesn't matter. If you get rid of him, you better have somebody that's better.
Mm-hmm.
And Big Eck, good friend of mine, but I don't know if he's better than that Gordon. In fact, I'm convinced he's not.
Or find six or seven new good players that don't exist.
Exactly, maximising the potential of what he's got. So that's all you can do. And sometimes it's not an easy headline, that, is it? As an easy headline as Saturn.
I'm really glad that somebody's walking into the gale.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know it, like all monosodium glutamate, it becomes addictive.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get into a cycle of people wanting to hear yes, sack him, mm-hmm. it's what you say, because it is quite addictive. You say, okay, let's move on, let's get rid of that subject and let's move mm-hmm. on to the next subject, whether it's for the right reasons, whether it will have the right effect or not. And also, just like at the guillotine, there's a natural, we all have a natural bloodlust, sadly.
Not me. Actually, I've never had, but the other side of it I see, which I've worked in the media for quite a long time now, is that I know some of the guys are clever enough and cute enough to know that that's what sells,
mm-hmm.
sells them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, some ex-players as well, you've seen it yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's perfectly reasonable. It's a game. It's not for me, it's not a game, but for others it's a game, and it's a way of earning a living. And I used to be, and he used to despise that.
Mm.
I don't anymore. I just see it's a game. There was a guy many years ago called Jimmy, was he Sanderson in Scotland, used to do
you're
it.
At the game caller.
It's no different now. It's exactly the same, only a different version.
Jimmy the first shock jock in Scotland.
Exactly.
Right,
so when you've seen it once, you're a bit dim if you can't see it happen again. So I watch. But I find it all very interesting. I find the whole media circus is the wrong word, but the whole way that media runs quite interesting. Again, we've talked in the past about, you know, how Irish media and sports very different from British media and sport.
Can we, because we both admire them, can we just say, the guys who produce and talk on Off the Ball and News Talk, they're worth mentioning because they are that good. So that's,
I'll say that. Apart from me on a Monday night, could I do every Monday night?
That's
but they are.
Fish.
No, but
they're some of the excellent workers in the Irish sports media, because we would include set captains too. But we both think well of those guys.
Here's a thought though. You always, so the next question is, which go right to your questions away, why? And I asked somebody, and I got a great answer once. let me throw this one at you, or anyone listening. You look at British media, and you know, not all of it, don't abuse all, because there's some very good journals out there, and many I hugely respect and I do read, but maybe less so than maybe times gone past, and it's easier to do the shock jock stuff a little bit. But if you go to Ireland, there is some shock jockey stuff, but you will get depth, and you will get intelligence, and you will get knowledge, and they will not apologise for it. I remember asking one of the guys, why is it that there's a cultural difference?
Yeah.
Why is it? And somebody said brilliantly to me once, it's your base newspaper. How do you mean? I said, well, if you say, what is the newspaper of the UK, that everybody reads?
Evening Express in Aberdeen, obviously. Do we have to say it out loud?
You have to say it out loud. It's sad, but it's true.
There's two villains over my lifetime. There's two villains. Mm-hmm. The Sun is one, and now the Mail is the other.
Right, so the Sun's the one. Right, so that is the base, right? Now, it's not a newspaper I have to read or get or anything, but I know that's the base of... When I say base, I mean that's where the culture comes from, because it's so big in the culture. Where's the base in Ireland?
I'd say the Times, the...
Exactly. Your first answer gives it away every time.
The Indian background, too.
Well, but that's the base. That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
So the thinking comes from there. The idea comes from there. And it doesn't give you all the answers to it, but it gives you where
Given that we're only exchanging ideas, what I've found, and I've spent a lot of time watching friends of mine play sport to a high level, or going there and watching sport, or working with the broadcasters that you're talking about... One of the things that I always say to them, and these two ideas might link, might tessellate. Apart from Australia or Australians, I've never met an audience in any country that has a greater thirst for all sports, whether it be their sport or not, than in Ireland. I've gone and worked in countries, or I know people from countries where there'll be a basketful of three or four or five sports that are extremely important and that company might be knowledgeable about. But when you go across Ireland, I think a greater part of that community is still playing sport and living a clubhouse idea, whether it be GAA or football or rugby. You get generations of families and neighbours all going down the clubhouse, seeing a game of an afternoon, going and watching competitive sport, maybe helping develop, because the local community has a, whether it be hurling or GAA football or soccer or rugby or golf or whatever that what you want. So one, they're all more deeply woven into the idea of what's sport for, how do you support it, who's any good. A young one's coming through, and they're much more diverse than our culture, I think, and that's helpful.
And a part of the reason is where their base is. It's a wider one. You know, I don't know the full reason. Somebody will do a study into it once. But, you know, I go over there for quite a few years. I was doing Satanta over there. I was flying over there once a week, as I said, doing news talk. And to be fair, you'll say something sometimes. You'll be in one of the studios, you know, off air, and you'll say, what happened in the golf last week? And they'll say, oh, Harrington, you've seen the 13th, you know, he had that shot, you know, and he should have faded it. And you're going, it was just a vague question.
he was okay.
And you get this noise coming from everywhere, and it's a sport picked out there. Anyway, so I think we're both big fans, and I'm certainly a big fan, and, you know, anytime I'm asked to do it. But it's to take nothing away from, you know, different types of journalism. And again, I want to always bring it back to him. I don't say what's good or bad. I say what interests me. And I've very much grown into that. I'm taught by my wife to have an opinion and believe in it, but not there is more than one right.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When we've been talking about John Terry, is he effectively just a modern Dougie. This is not a visual medium, but I am showing Pat picture taken from the 1883 Cup Winners' Cup final as I think Santayana is trying to lecture Big Doug with a finger wagging at him, and Doug's picking the other player up.
I can give you 20 minutes on Dougie.
Let's do that.
Well,
for good or bad?
No, very, very quick.
Huntley legend.
Comes down to Chelsea when I'm there, and he's replacing an absolute legend, Joey Jones, who the fans love more than anyone else. And Big Doug's not always the
Joey
most...
was born with tattoos, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, but in all the fist pumps and rest before fist pumps were a thing. And Dougie comes in, and of course he's rough and ready. We understand that. So he's come down, and being Scottish, we want the Scottish guys to do well. First training session, the ball's bounced and gone up. So I need to go up for the header with Dougie. So I got to put my shoulder in to head him. Honestly, it was like hitting a wall. ouch! you banged your shoulder off him and you fell down again. And he just looked at you as if saying, what was that all about? Made of a different material than most of us, and there's a few guys like that, but the sweetest, nicest guy in the world off the pitch as well. And he did the nicest thing with me. It was every, before we go into that, 83, round about that time, played in a cup final against Rangers, I believe.
Immediately after that game.
Derek Johnson.
Ah, no, 79, yeah. Where
he sent off.
Derek has admitted that he swindled the ref.
Yeah, swindled
the ref. He'd been butted or whatever.
So Dougie comes down. Derek Johnson was at Chelsea at the time.
Of course he was,
Same dressing room, year, never spoke a word. Never said a word to each other. How can you do that?
Brilliant.
How can you sit in this small area?
I knew Dougie had Sicilian blood in him. I've always said he was from Sicily.
Nothing. And Big Derek was a funny bloke, and he would try and rewind up. Nothing. Complete and utter dead eyes. But I love Dougie. He did this one great favour to me once. At the end of one season, my flat rental had run out. Changed daisy. Player of the year at Chelsea, I was on like 180 quid a week. Things have changed. Just
and you know where to stay.
I had nowhere to live. And my rent had run out 2 weeks before I went back up north, you know, for the summer and come back down again. And Dougie said, oh, come and stay with me and my wife. And I went and stayed with Dougie in this lovely family setting, which is considering the life I was having at the time is weird. And it was lovely, and he took care of us. The weirdest thing about it, and the thing I loved about being involved in football and being involved in football, I was such an outsider within it that things that other people would find normal, I found extremely strange. So you could almost put any player there, and I'll tell you a story about the weirdness of it, which from their perspective was perfectly normal how they behaved, and from my perspective as an outsider was, my nickname at the time was Weirdo with the players, and I'm thinking, no, I'm the normal one. You're all weird. And I was absolutely convinced about it. But he's a great guy, dude.
Well, without making that, I can't let that go, without necessarily making that point personal to anybody who was weird in your experience, unless you want to, because
we all were.
Open.
By the way, weird's not bad. Interesting.
Yeah, come
exactly.
On.
Weird's okay.
You're selling snow to the Eskimos there.
Okay.
I agree. One of the things that we do about this, although this is our Pat Nevin episode, it's also a real privilege to be able to open the curtains of the football world a little bit to people. So, tell the first anecdote that comes to your mind about that they're the weird ones, not me.
Right, I'll tell you a really stupid, simple one, right? So, dead simple one, I'm sure I've told before. It's just the first one that comes to my mind. I read a lot. I was very into serious literature, like Camus, as you do when you're younger. And but of course, in the team bus, this looks weird. And I'm reading one day the short stories of Anton Chekhov on the bus, as you do. And one of the players, Dale Jasper, walks back up and says, oh, Patsy, I know one of your authors. And I went, really? Well, sit down. He sat down. And he goes, really, Jake? I'm amazed. And he goes, yeah, but I didn't know you were a Trekkie part. And I went, not that Chekhov. No, different Chekhov, Dale. And I would have all these things happening all the time, and I'd be looking around for something. Can I share this with somebody? And it always happened that I would find myself in what I thought was a normality.
What did I remind you of with my?
I remember often in games you'd say something, but you'd just say the words that came to you. So I'm playing near the end of my career, playing for Tranmere, setting up the wall. So the wall set up. 20 yards out, this free kick, really tense time. The wall set up. I'm on the side of the wall, I'm the guy charging the ball, but I'm round at the side, that way. I'm close, and the referee's there, and I'm 10 yards away, but I'm at an arc from the referee. Says, get back. And I went, what? And he says, get back. And everyone's jostling. I said, look, we're equidistant.
The wall,
the referee, the guy's taking it. I'm like, equidistant. And I go, and it happened all the time. You just look at you as if to say, no, but that's a perfectly reasonable word, equidistant.
Bloody words and the trouble they get you.
You don't think it that way.
Your dictionary,
words,
yeah.
So sometimes the words are interesting. We all love words, and I love writing, and still do a lot of writing. And quite often, I change my language and my accent for where I'm working. Mm-hmm. There's no point in me doing world service and using my Glasgow accent. You're wasting your time, Mick. You're not
efficacy
really understanding.
Again, it would be quite nice to be understood.
Yes.
From on there.
So the idea, you're not being posh, you're just cleaning the voice up, and so you do that then again. But sometimes, over the years in football, you had to do that with language as well.
Well, let's test your language now. And let's do a trick that we tried with...
There's only one person whose face I don't want to see coming here if it's a face, but carry on.
No, there's no faces at the moment. I'm just offering our companions the chance to visually represent what we just talked about. Before we went and sat down with Chris Waddle, we had a big, long... It may seem that we'd never work on this and think about it, but before we went to see Chris up in Sheffield, we all talked about this idea that we love hearing a person's skills worked out, unpacked, described, because, as we didn't have your talents. And therefore, if you get a chance to ask somebody to explain it, it's a privilege. But often, as you know, people who have been in your position don't quite know how they do it. And we were struck by the build-up to the Damien Duff interview, where he was excoriating about his own inability to teach young ones, as when he walked off the pitch, he was embarrassed, he was angry, and he's changing that, but he was just embarrassed at. So we said, will we ask Chris about what he could do as an exciting, talented wide player, or creative player? So we sat down and we said, look, how did you do it? And he just, and I imagine you can do something similar about your own skills, but it does interest me. When you're in a one-on-one repeatedly, which you are, whether you are playing, whether you consider yourself a 10 or a striker or a winger, really often, and before we recorded, you talked about one of the one-on-one battles in your life against a diminutive quick Spaniard. What did you do? How much did you think about it? How much did you analyse? How much of it was about physiology? Try and tell us a little bit about what made you special with the ball at your feet.
I'm going to really disappoint you. And I always disappoint people when I tell them about it. It was utterly worked out. Totally worked out. People always say the phrase, oh, you were naturally gifted. None, I'm afraid. It was all worked. Everything. From the age of about 3 or 4, my dad was a coach. He used to take me down to watch Celtic training. Mm-hmm. Used to be able to go
Barfield.
Yeah, used to be able to go and watch. My dad read all the coaching books from Herrera onwards.
Gosh,
my dad would take me out every single day, and we would work on techniques every single day of my life. So after work, my dad came on a long walk at the railways, where he worked, and 5 o'clock I'd be there, boots on, out. We'd do an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever, and we would work on all these different methodologies. From Stanley Matthews used to do the one with the sticks. So every single one. Then we go and watch, say, Celtic play. Now, it was a very fortunate time. This was the end of the Lisbon Lions and the start of the quality streak. So you're seeing Jinky and you're seeing Lennox and Auld, but you're also seeing Kenny and Lou McCarry and David Hay. and McGrain. And if any of them done a trick, I saw it and we'd go and work it and I'd get it and I'd learn it. So I'd learn every single trick I'd ever see. Now, this is before the time of videos and lots of games on TV. So every single one of them was worked and analysed and developed. And there was very few that you couldn't do after a while. But then it was to put them into a game at the right time. But because you'd done the infamous 10,000 hours, which I had done by a very, very, very early age with this technical stuff, it was just there.
Why did you grimace when you said that 10,000 hours?
Because I know the history of that, and it wasn't Gladwell that came up with it originally. It was another man that came up with it originally, and 10,000 hours is a pat expression. But in actual fact, put that amount of time and effort into anything, you will become natural and become second for nature. 10,000, it's almost a...
It becomes automatic.
It's totally automatic. Can I give you a great example of it? There's a particular trick that I had, and I learned it off a couple of players. There was a player at Rangers used to the centre forward recently who was brilliant, Michael Moles.
Oh yeah, the Dutchman, yeah.
He had this trick. And I used to use this trick all the time. But Michael used to do it as well as anyone I'd ever seen. It was a wait, player behind you, mm-hmm. wait for him to come over your shoulder. Mm-hmm. Anyway, either shoulder, doesn't matter. You better if he's taller than you. As soon as he's over your shoulder, I'm gone. I know I've beaten you. And I'm beyond you already. I'm already thinking what I'm going to do next, because I am going to drag you.
Lean forward and corkscrew.
And corkscrew, right?
Yeah.
So, and twist. And it's a special twist that damages your inguinal ligament, in case you're interested.
that was my next question.
Yeah. That was one of my favourites. I learned it very, very early on. I'd watched Moles was famously very good at, you know, the trick I'm talking about. The specific.
Does it have any relation to what Dalglish used to do?
To some degree, yes. And that's probably It's probably where I got the original. Because he used to stick his backside in and roll them that way.
Yeah.
And I'd manipulated it. So that's one tiny little bit of it. So you're asking me what you do, you have one on one. I would always manipulate a situation to get the defender where I wanted them.
Yeah.
If you watch a tennis player like Andy,
yeah,
it's three shots before it.
Bring him to the situation that you want.
That's what you're doing. Now, when you're manipulating that, and you've got that, and you do that, and it works. And by the way, I know I'm going to be able to do it with you, because I know what you're going to do. I've already, in my mind, also checked around where everybody is. And by the time I get by that, I know that somebody's peeled off in the back post, I'm going to get there.
And they, presumably the more intelligent ones, kind of are doing the reverse to you. Like,
well, there we go.
He's getting him, here's the role, I'll make my move.
Yeah. So they, that's just one.
Aldridge at Tranmere would have been one.
No, Dixon, he just did. They weren't as complicated. They just went in an area. Don't worry, you go there, I'll find you there. So they will go there. So you manipulate all of them, you learn with people around you. So when you're on those days, I'm going to couch it in such language that I'll try not.
Don't say equidistant.
No.
All right?
As you've mentioned before, I didn't like playing the wing. I never liked playing the wing. You know, you've only got that.
I think anybody with a brain could see that you were somebody who, if you allowed the team that you was with you to compensate for you being able to go and find clever space, then you'd do special things. It looked like to me.
So that was it. And I had a couple of managers, only a couple of my entire 20-year career, that would allow that for only maybe 3 or 4 years of my career. And it was so, you know, freeing, you know, and it was lovely. And then you look at it now and you watch Iniesta and you watch Silva and you go, why wasn't I allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Why didn't you trust me? And now and again when the managers did, it always seemed to work. But the bravery of the British game at the time wasn't there, because it was 4-4-2. It was 4-3-3. Mm-hmm. No one was playing between lines. No one was doing that.
Well, even when, not for you, but when Between the Lines was introduced as a concept, probably the first time I heard it spoken out loud, not in your industry maybe, was Rafa Benitez at Liverpool.
Yeah.
And I remember in the media, at least, and probably amongst fans, there was this general...
But it's so obvious when you're there.
Of course it is.
When you're playing it, you're thinking, well, that's all the space is.
Space.
You know, and you watch it now and you think... I've played 20 years, just about, and... There was some players I kind of really admired for the technical abilities, not that really that many, but then I played in Britain at a time when there weren't many foreign players coming in. And then when I left the top level down there, the Premier League was just starting, it was big and physical, and I didn't really like it. I thought it was a bit rubbish, but it was, you know, it was quite successful, but I didn't like it. I didn't like watching it or that. And then one player would be brought in, it might be Cantona, it might be Zola, and it was always somebody outside who knew how to do that. And you sit and go, God, I wish I'd have had more opportunities to do that. But it's my own fault. I only have myself to blame. I had opportunities to move abroad. I could have done it. It comes across as arrogance sometimes. I hope it doesn't. But it's just when you know you have certain capabilities and, you know, slightly underused. But I still didn't, I wasn't embittered by it, because I still had, you know, 19 years pro, you know, played hundreds and 800 games. That's a lot of games. Had a fairly successful career, but, you know.
Hopefully you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios 12 months ago. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day that they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 a month, you will get an exclusive big interview plus regular mini documentaries, not only all ad-free, but all featuring me and bringing you interesting, funny, and sometimes scandalous things from Spanish football. Go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. That means that once you join, you will have a treasure trove of interviews with funny, elite, interesting, revelatory, top-class footballers. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast. You will help to keep us on the road, interviewing people and sending that content for your delectation. If you go to the gym, you'll be slimmer. If you've got a dog, he or she will thank you. If you've got a TV, you can turn it off and listen to this instead.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.